Hello and welcome to Vet Club. We're going to have a vet talk about vet a vet talk. Topic. And, I don't know. It's been a little bit. Sorry. I guess we've been busy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's the same old excuse for everything. I mean, it doesn't make it not true, but So we've been busy, and then we were on a trip, and I forgot to bring the suitcase of podcast stuff because we were going to record while on one of the trips, but I forgot. Sorry. So here we are, finally recording, and we're going to talk about hypoadrenocorticism, also known as Addison's disease. And
Addison's is a lot easier than hypo.
Yeah, that's why people call it
Addison's disease.
Yes, that's.
Did I say it right?
No, not at all. Hypo.
Hypo.
Adreno.
Adreno.
Corticism. Obviously. Oh my God, it's like the easiest word in the world to say. No, it's not. And that's why people like to say Addison's disease. But, you know, Addison probably did something horrible and we're not supposed to use their name anymore. I don't know the history. I don't know who Addison is.
They're from Grey's Anatomy.
That's not who this is named after at all. Definitely not.
They wrote the book.
Hypoadrenocorticism, and I like to emphasize the hypo because if you say it fast, it sounds a lot like hyperadrenocorticism, which is Cushing's disease. Also easier to say. We're not going to talk about Cushing's disease though, or the Cushing reflex, which is different from Cushing's disease. We're going to talk about Addison's disease. And why?
Because students asked for it.
There was a request. It was like, we've been talking about all these different topics and, you know, we just don't feel like we have a good handle on Addison's disease and like
so get
how
ready
to treat
to get
it.
Some
and
handles
how to,
on the Addison's disease.
Yes. We're going to place handles on it. So then you can have a good handle on your Addison's
disease. I was
thinking like
basketball handles.
I don't know what that means.
It's like Steph Curry has good handles. I guess
nobody says that.
Yeah,
nobody in the history of the world has said that.
That's totally.
Are
a
you
thing.
Serious?
Yeah.
It's like Steph Curry has good handles. They say it like that.
Yeah.
Do they do the head movement like you did?
Yeah. it's like if you're good at dribbling,
you're gonna have to. But they say it has good handles. Like pluralize it.
Yeah.
All right, you're gonna have to show me this later, because no, not right now. It doesn't matter. And it like nobody listening will know whether you're making it up
or not.
Everybody
knows it's real. They're all like, oh, Dr. Connor is so out of touch.
I mean, that's probably true, but still, it also sounds really lame.
Does she even?
Like, I can't even right now. I can't with you. I think that the thing that that people say all the time, and I understand like what it means, but it like is just really weird. We're like, oh, it's giving this. Like instead of saying, oh, that reminds me of this, whatever. Oh, yeah, it's giving Steph Curry handles. That's not how you would use it. Okay, let's move on from this because I'm just sounding dumb. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm saying, right? When people say, oh, it's giving anything. Oh, you don't know this? Let me school you on this, what the kids are saying.
It's giving me like bad vibes or something.
It could be anything. But usually they'll use it. It's like a simile. They're going to compare it to something like that. Oh, yeah. Like somebody's doing something. Oh, she's given Taylor Swift. Like it's making me think of this thing. It's making me think of Taylor Swift. Oh yeah. Oh, that's given me, I don't know.
I think you're just hearing people wrong. You're probably skipping a word.
That's what it seems like. Yeah. That maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just not hearing people right. Okay. So maybe we'll have a young person come on the show and teach us.
We can get the Rizzler to come on.
What? The Rizzler? Is that a real thing? Who's that?
You ever? I tell you this joke all the time.
Well, I ignore you.
The mandatory fun guy. He's like talking to the recruits. He's like, all right, the lieutenant's mad. He's mad at this Rizzler that you keep on talking about. I know the Rizzler isn't a person, but you just need to pick someone. And they're the Rizzler now. And
okay,
they're in
it
trouble.
Sounds familiar, like you told me this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody else knows this story. It's just you.
There's there's like hundreds of thousands of people that know it, but
there are
billions
tens,
of people.
There are tens of people who know this. All right. So it turns out we're both lame. Because of that, we might as well talk about Addison's
disease. Go back to it.
So Addison's or hypoadrenocorticism. Is a disease in which your adrenal gland, the adreno in adrenocorticism, is not doing its thing. The name actually, now that I think about it, Yeah, it's too low. Sometimes nothing, but essentially not enough of what the adrenal gland should be doing. And one of the big things the adrenal gland does is secrete cortisol. So that's where the hypoadrenocorticism comes from. And the, I guess, what often gets referred to as typical Addison's, I don't know if you could hear the air quotes, but typical was in air quotes, is when the patient's adrenal glands are not producing and secreting enough cortisol. And all of the, you know, problems with that stem from that. And then there is, but there's also, the adrenal glands also secrete, so those are glucocorticoids, but they also secrete mineral corticoids. And those are hormones that are important for maintaining electrolyte balance, specifically sodium and potassium. That hormone will send a signal to your kidneys that will say, hold on to sodium and get rid of potassium. And so if you're missing those hormones, you will have not enough cortisol, and you'll have, which is a stress hormone. And so you won't be able to handle stress very well. And I don't mean that in like the psychological sense where you're going to be like, oh man, I'm not dealing with my stress. You're literally getting sick. And it could be from anything. It can be like psychological stress, but it also could be from like another illness or just, you know, any little thing that kind of, you should respond with stress, which is super important. Your body, anytime it gets, attacked in any way, right? Whether that's a fight or flight response, like, holy crap, you know, there's a lot going on in my life, and, or I'm being chased by a bear, or I think I have the flu. Your body, has to respond to that in different ways. And one of the really important mediators of that is cortisol, is steroids. And so if you don't have that, your body just like shuts down, and it doesn't cope physically. But also, again, the adrenal glands will also produce these mineral corticoids, which are important for maintaining electrolyte balance, which is important for maintaining water balance. And so those often go together, but not all of the time. And so in atypical Addison's, they just have, they're just not producing the glucocorticoids, but not also the mineral corticoids. Usually that comes later, but so it makes it a little harder to diagnose them because they don't have all of the features of the typical disease.
There's a lot of big words when you're describing this.
Sorry. Like what?
Which corticoids?
Stress.
Yeah. No, stress is, yeah, I understand stress.
I know, I'm joking. Yeah, it's
so
just dumb
typical
words.
Typical is when you're not producing steroids.
You're not producing steroids or the other hormone that helps with electrolyte balance. So typical is you're not producing
so
any
not,
of the things you're supposed
you're
to.
You're not producing steroids or Gatorade.
Right. Sure.
And then atypical
is when you're just not producing steroids.
You're just not producing steroids.
But you do still have some Gatorade. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And Gatorade is a little misleading. So Gatorade has both sodium and potassium in it. Whereas there's a hormone that will tell your kidneys to keep sodium and get rid of potassium. And so they will work in opposite directions. And so if you are missing that, then you will lose too much sodium and hold on to too much potassium. And so one of the hallmarks of typical Addison's is hyponatremia, or too low sodium, and hyperkalemia, or too much potassium. And so when you see that, when, you know, people see that on blood work, they go, ooh, I wonder if it's Addison's. And that's like a hallmark. But sometimes that's still fine, and they're just not missing the steroids. And steroids isn't something we measure on, you know, a blood panel. So it's a little more subtle. It's a little harder to find. And I think that's where it's why it was called atypical, is because it was harder to find. Not necessarily that it's more or less common, because it's actually probably it's there's a good chance, and this is me just making this up a little bit, but
whack.
Well, and there's reason behind it, and I'll explain that. But I think there's a good chance that a lot of Addisonian patients start out as quote unquote atypical and then become typical later, but we just don't diagnose them in that time.
Yeah, so it's like further progressed, maybe.
Yeah, and so we just miss them, and so it's not necessarily that one is typical and one is atypical, or one is normal or not normal. It's just, oh, this one is harder to spot. And so when people were, you know, figuring things out and diagnosing things and describing these diseases, the typical one was the one that they were able to find. And it was like these sneaky atypical ones because somebody had to be fairly clever and suspect it and then find it, be like, well, that's not typical. It's like, well, no, it's just maybe early in the process. And a lot of animals that are diagnosed with, I don't know numbers, like what percentage of animals, but I've definitely seen this and I think it's fairly common that animals that get diagnosed with atypical Addison's and still have mineralocorticoids progress to the point where over time they will end up also not be making mineralocorticoids and need to supplement that as well. So that's a little bit of background.
Is there something else that can give you low sodium, high potassium?
Yeah, there's several other things. And so if you have low sodium and high potassium, that's not like a diagnosis. You're not like, oh, I'm done. But you would be like, ooh, I'm suspicious of this. And then you would test. You know, you would, depending on what else is going on.
This is one of those that has a box test.
A box test?
Like there's just like a strip thing, but I'm like,
no, it's not that kind of test. It's actually, the test is really cool. And if you understand endocrinology, it sort of makes sense. But we're about to talk about it. And then you'll be like, oh, that makes so much sense. Okay. So the way your hormones work in your body, hormones are released from a gland, like the adrenal gland, in response to certain needs by the body. And so there's all these feedback mechanisms. And so it's like, hey, we have, in this case, there is stress. Like, I'm freaking out and I've got these other signals that are sending. And that reaches oftentimes the brain. And then the brain will release a substance that will then travel in the blood to the organ itself and be like, hey, secrete that thing you're supposed to secrete. Okay. So in this case, that would be ACTH or adrenocorticotropin releasing hormone. So ACTH. Nobody pronounces it. You say ACTH, but I feel like we should. We should just call it ACT. ACT. So the brain releases ACT and that sends a signal to the adrenal gland to say, hey, secrete some cortisol, some steroids. And when the cortisol gets high, that shuts off the release of ACTH. You'd be like, okay, we're good. We got enough cortisol. And so there's this feedback loop. And we understand that like that is how it's supposed to work. And so if you want to find out if your adrenal gland is working, what would you do?
Measure the ACTH.
So you can measure that. That's actually, yes, that's a good idea, but it's also a little bit harder. But what you can also do is just give some ACTH. So I'm just going to give an injection of it and then I'm going to measure the cortisol. So I'm going to be like, how much cortisol do we have just swimming around regular? All right, there's this much. Now I'm going to give you that thing that the brain is supposed to release and tell you to make more cortisol and then see, does the cortisol go up in response to that? Ta-da. Isn't that cool?
If it doesn't, then you don't have any.
And you're like, there you go. Then your adrenal gland is broken. And then you go, that's the problem.
I know how the endocrine system works now.
Yeah. Don't you feel like a super smart person?
No.
But it's just feedback. So you're like, this is, the body works like this, and it should do this in response to these things. And if this is the thing we think isn't working, let me try to stimulate that and see if it will respond. So if I were to give ACTH exogenously, like from a syringe into the blood, and then I measure the response and I go, oh, you responded appropriately. Okay, there's a different reason why your sodium is low and your potassium is high.
That's what I was going to ask. And do you put it in, where do you put the... Can you just put it anywhere? You just put it in
the blood.
In the blood.
Yeah, because that's how the brain will do it. It will secrete it into the blood and then it will travel to the adrenal glands. And everybody else is like, what's that? Don't worry, it's not for you. That message is not for you. So it goes to the adrenal glands. They have receptors for it. And they say, aha, we got the signal from the brain. Cortisol, get out there. And then for whatever reason, the adrenal gland's like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. We're tired of this. And so, yeah, we're not going to respond to you brain signals. But it doesn't know the difference between the ACTH that came from the brain or the one that I gave. So we give that and then we measure the cortisol like an hour or so later. And then we see what was the response.
So what happens if you get too much cortisol? Like let's say you were just to take some ACTH.
We call that Cushing's disease. That's the other one. That's hyperadrenocorticism. So when it goes bonkers, either from too much ACTH secretion in the brain, or if the adrenal gland goes rogue and it's just like, here's all the cortisol all the time, and it's ignoring the signals, the feedback mechanism of shutting that down, then you get too much cortisol, and that is hyperadrenocorticism or Cushing's disease. So that's not what we're not talking about. I mean, we can talk about it, but we're not going to talk about it extensively because apparently the students feel like they get they get enough of that, but not the Addison's. Cushing's is also more common. So too much cortisol is a more common diagnosis than not enough. And yeah.
So what do they look like differently? Too little cortisol looks like what?
So too little cortisol. So it's similar whether your body is producing too much steroids or if like people who have to take steroids, for a disease to kind of, you know, help control their disease. No, not those kind of, those are anabolic steroids. Nice try. So this would be people who are on like immunosuppressive drugs because they've had a transplant or they have some sort of immune disease, like rheumatoid arthritis or something. They might be on steroids. There's other drugs for that now, but, that's the idea. So, some of that is going to be, weight gain actually is pretty common, but in specific areas, it'll affect your collagen. And so like dogs will get like a pot-bellied appearance and they'll have like thin skin, and like loss of muscle. They can have some joint issues from all the extra steroids. They can have thinning hair. So fur coats will look really thin.
They have extra steroids or it's less?
Too much of the, again, not the steroids you're thinking about for bodybuilders.
Well, I mean like cortisol.
Too much cortisol. So this is Cushing's disease.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Addison's.
Oh, I was starting with the one because you were like, how are they different? So I was starting with Cushing's. So Cushing's disease is going to be pot-bellied appearance, thin skin, maybe some joint laxity, like looseness in your joints. Dogs will like pant a lot. So things like that. But they're like, they're okay. They're stable. For Addison's disease, the opposite, not having enough steroids. This this disease sometimes gets called like the great pretender, because the signs can be really, really variable. Oftentimes they will have waxing and waning signs. So they'll have, they'll get really sick. Oftentimes it's just like GI signs, vomiting, diarrhea, lethargy, just feeling crummy.
So everything.
It can cause a lot of different things. And so animals will come in and they'll just have sort of vague signs. And people are like, oh, you seem a little dehydrated. They'll give them some fluids, and then they'll feel better. They're like, cool. And then they'll go back and live their lives and until the next stressful event happens, and then this will come back again. There are some other like kind of specific things you can find on blood work. So one, we talked about if it's typical, they will have low sodium and high potassium, but the other things they can have is a low cholesterol, a mildly low blood sugar. Let's see, what are some other like subtle things that they might
have? So the animals look like they just don't recover well from
yeah,
things.
Yeah. They get hit really hard.
So they're
really
fine until like an event happens and then they just
oftentimes
don't recover.
Yeah. And not everybody recognizes, like you don't always know when the stress is going
to
be, but then,
well, it's hard
and then,
to tell, like,
and then you give them some supportive care, some like vague, whatever it happens to be. And they're like, okay, I'm okay again. And then, but they can get very, very sick. Because again, you need that stress response to respond to all sorts of different things. So if it gets out of hand, a couple things, one, they can lose a lot of fluids. Because again, one of the reasons you're supposed to hang on to sodium is so that you hold on to water. And if they're not doing that because they're missing the mineral corticoids, that can be a problem. The very, very low sodium in and of itself can be a problem. The very high potassium in and of itself can be a problem. So they can come in like shock.
What's a corticoid? You keep saying that.
Sorry. That is, so cortisol is a steroid and corticoid is a steroid-like molecule. So any molecule, oid just means like. So you're like, globoid. It's like a globe. I don't know. that's the first thing that came to mind. So corticoid is just this class of drugs that fall under the umbrella of like a steroid.
Cool.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there without
fancy doctor words.
I didn't make it up. I'm
still
just using
fancy
it.
Doctor word.
I don't know if it's fancy. It is kind of a weird word. It's fun to say though. You should say it a few times. Corticoid. So yeah, the hard part about Addison's disease and recognizing it is that it doesn't look like anything specific. It's not like, aha, this is pathognomonic, which is another fancy word that means this is, I was ready for that one. This is like the thing. If you see this, that pretty much tells you it's this disease. It's kind of like a one-to-one thing. The closest we get to that with Addison's, it's not pathognomonic, but it's like really suspicious is when you see the high potassium and low sodium. If it's typical, and if you've gotten to the point of doing blood work. But then you still have to do a confirmatory test. So some people will say like any sick animal, it's justifiable to test for Addison's by doing an ACTH stimulation test, which is the test we described earlier. You stimulate them with ACTH and you see if their cortisol responds. That's probably a bit excessive, right? That's not very helpful.
Yeah, how common is the disease?
It is not very common. And I probably could Google like what's the incidence of it, but it's yeah, how fairly rare.
Once a month?
No, probably not even that common. Like probably I'm in a referral hospital. We probably diagnose it. Our hospital maybe 2 or 3 times a year.
Yeah.
Now if you're in a busier hospital, maybe once a month or every other month, like it's not that common, but if you never test for it, you never look for it, you're never going to find it. So a few scenarios that I can just share anecdotally, like these are experiences that I have had, where I was like, aha, we should look for this, and found things. So this is my favorite story. You've probably heard this before, but when I was an intern, so I was a brand new doctor and didn't really know anything. And I was on emergency. I was on overnight by myself, and this case came in, and the dog was not like in terrible shape, but it was fairly sick. And so I had done some blood work and came back, and on its chemistry, it had low cholesterol, a little bit low blood sugar, a few other like minor things. The electrolytes were okay. And I was like, I don't know what's wrong with this dog. And so, but it had like enough things on the chemistry panel, the blood work that were off, that I opened up a clinical pathology book. And I was like, what are the differentials for all of these things? And its blood sugar was low, but not low enough to like cause clinical signs. It was mildly low, but I was just like, meh. So I'm looking at all these differentials. And one of them that came up a couple times was Addison's, hypoadrenocorticism. And I was like, well, the electrolytes are okay, but like, maybe this is atypical Addison's. And so like, I was like, oh my God, I had myself convinced. And part of the reasons I had myself convinced was when I had gotten the history from this family, again, the dog came in with just like vague GI signs, like vomiting, diarrhea, like whatever. Mm. But they had shared that like this had happened before. Like this wasn't the first time this dog had ever had that.
Yeah, I think that's what I would think. Yep. Like a dog that's frequently sick.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be that often, but like a couple times before they're, you know, and yeah, you could
they
go.
They don't get stressed that much. Like
right.
That
yeah, but it's just like, yeah, it happened a few months ago. And then I think it happened like 6 months before that and whatever.
When the seasons change.
Yeah, right. They hadn't come up with, I didn't ask about a pattern. At that point, I did not have Addison's on my radar. So I wasn't digging for that. But then I was like, oh man. So I'm reading up about this. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, you know, nobody else is around. And I'm like, I have cracked this case. I was so proud of myself. And I was like, I was convinced that that's what this was. And so it's the middle of the night. The labs, you know, for advanced testing isn't available. I couldn't get all the drugs, but I was like, I am ready. So when the morning team comes, I'm going to be like, here's my plan. I've got it all figured out. I figured out the dose of ACTH you need to give. Like I had made it so easy for the next team. Right.
And then it's like, thanks intern.
Yeah. Kind of. So then, you know, the internal medicine resident, who's just a lovely person, comes in, and you know, I'm still like, so this is going to shock nobody, but like I'm high energy. Right. So like it's after the end of an overnight shift. Most people are like dragging and tired. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have the greatest thing. This is so good. I'm excited to round you on this case. And they're like, calm down. And I'm like, but I can't, this is wonderful. Right. So I'm rounding about this case, super excited. So proud of myself that I'd done this research and figured things out. And the resident was like, okay, yeah. Like not nearly as excited as I feel like they should have been, but I'm like, you know, it's early. Maybe they haven't had their coffee yet, whatever. Yeah. And so I let it go. And they were like, cool, great. Go to bed and we'll take care of it from here. So then I come back that night, you know, for my next shift. And to his credit, the resident came to me and I was like, yeah, what happened? They're like, he goes, I have to apologize to you. I'm like, what? He's like, I totally didn't think this dog had Addison's. After you left, I was like rounding with the students and I was like, yeah, like it's a possibility, but it's pretty unlikely. I don't think that's what it is, but they ended up testing for it and the dog totally had Addison's. And the resident was telling me like, yeah, I have to, I was like, he had nothing to apologize. Cause he was super fine with me. He didn't tell me like, you're an idiot, but like, he was like, but yeah, after you left, I kind of told the students like, yeah, she was really excited about it, but like, it's probably not what it is. But they still tested for it.
How expensive is the test?
So the test isn't terribly expensive. The ACTH, the synthetic ACTH, can be a little pricey. So in general, probably the entire test, depending on the size of the dogs, probably going to be around $200 to $250.
Yeah, that's kind of
so it's not like holy moly, it's thousands of dollars, but it's not like, oh, I'm just going to run this on every patient.
Yeah.
Now there is a screening test that people will do where they just will run a baseline cortisol. So when I was telling you before about the test, you can get what is the cortisol, the steroid level before we stimulate it, and then we stimulate it and see what happens. Well, what you can do is if the baseline cortisol is like high because they're stressed because they're sick, which is what it should be, you go, it's not Addison's and I don't need to give the expensive drug. So you can do a cheaper screening test. Yeah. But if that baseline is really low, some people would be like, I'm convinced, but really you should do the stimulation to confirm like, no, they cannot respond to the ACTH. So you can start with just that. And then if it rules it out, like you're done, you don't have to do the expensive part. But yeah, the full test is about two. So you don't want to just run it willingly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not $10.
So, no. So they felt like I had enough argument. they to their credit, they also ran the test. But yeah, so the dog came back as Addisonian and I was like, woohoo. I mean, I was already convinced at that point. Now I have also been wrong a number of times as well. Usually not as convinced. And I've been wrong on the other side where I've done the same thing where I'm like, yeah, it could be, but it's probably not. We'll test for it. And then I've been wrong. So that's the tricky thing about Addison's is as soon as you think you know what they look like and what they don't, a case will come in and not fit the bill that you thought you had. So I think it is important.
And it's kind of a zebra thing.
It is. Yeah, it is a bit of a zebra. However, here's the cool thing about it. The cool part about this disease, it can be tricky to figure out and to diagnose. Like once you suspect it, it's easy to diagnose. You do this test and either it's yes or it's not. So it's not like it's really complicated. It's the thinking of it is the hardest part to be like, oh, I should consider that. And then if you diagnose it and they're Addisonian, it's actually pretty darn easy to treat. So how do you think you treat it?
I think you treat it by fluids.
temporarily, that will help with some things, but no. So basically, the adrenal gland is not producing steroids or mineral corticoids. And so you give them steroids and mineral corticoids. You just supplement the things that they're not making.
What's a mineral corticoid?
So a mineral corticoid, it's just what they're called. So this is the hormone that gets produced that tells the body, hold on to sodium and get rid of potassium. So that's it. That's all it means.
So is cortisol a mineral corticoid?
No, cortisol is a glucocorticoid. Okay. But they're all hormones produced by the adrenal gland. I didn't come up with the names. I'm sorry, they're confusing.
Yeah. Is it a mineral corticoid related to minerals at
yes.
all?
Yeah, okay. It's like the minerals of sodium and potassium. So okay. That's how you can remember that. The mineral corticoid, because you will be like, do these things with the minerals. And then glucocorticoid is like, do these things with the, that's a terrible, I can't keep going with that one. You're just going to have to remember that that's a regular steroid, but it's a type of steroid. So yeah. Okay. You'll like this. So the three, there's a whole other group of hormones produced by the adrenal gland I haven't even brought up yet. And those are the sex hormones. And so the adrenal gland produces three groups of hormones and it's salt, sugar, sex. Mm-hmm. And so salt is the like sodium and potassium. So the mineral corticoids, sugar is the glucocorticoids, and then sex are the sex hormones. And I remember because there are three different parts of the adrenal gland and there's different names for them. And there was like a mnemonic device that we used to remember like which ones they were. It was like GFR, which are the three. Now we can't even remember the names of the three segments of the adrenal gland, but they start with G, F, and R, and it's like escaping my brain right now. And GFR is a term we use for kidney stuff all the time. So it was easy to remember those letters in that order. And then GFR corresponded to salt, sugar, sex, but it's obviously not that good of a mnemonic device because I don't remember what GFR. I feel like if you gave me one of them, I would remember the others, but I don't know how you're going to do that.
Goo.
No, that's not right. But, so yeah, it's okay to forget some things sometimes, but
not for the Navli.
Yeah.
Remember
yeah.
everything.
Yeah. No, you don't even have to remember everything for that. Cause you can miss a good many.
70%.
But they're
everything.
Like some Latin terms for the segments of the adrenal gland. Where was I? Glucocorticoids. Oh, treating it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the treatment of Addison's is super fun. Well, I don't know if it's super fun, but it's very rewarding because you take a dog that's like really, really sick. Sometimes they come in like they're nearly dead and then you stabilize them. You get this test and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like the greatest diagnosis because all you have to do now is give your dog medication for the rest of its life. But the medications aren't terribly expensive. And so depending on whether you have typical or atypical Addison's, right? So with typical Addison's where they're missing both mineral corticoids and glucocorticoids, are you looking up the GFR stuff?
No, I was looking up to see who this Addison guy is.
Oh, that's fair too. We can do a little history lesson. So if they're missing glucocorticoids, then you supplement with glucocorticoids. And typically that's going to be just regular steroids that people are used to, like prednisone. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But and then there's also the mineral corticoid. And there's a few different options for supplementing the mineral corticoid and how you can do that. There's like a daily oral medication, or there's like a approximately once a month injection that you can give. And so there's pros and cons to all of them, like there is with anything. But basically, yeah, you just talk to the owners and you're like, all right, this is how this is going to be. Your dog just needs to take this medication for the rest of its life. And in general, that should prevent these, you know, episodes from happening. However, there's a little bit of nuance to the treatment part with respect to the glucocorticoids, in that, as I said before, you need steroids to respond to stressful events. Well, in normal, in health, like there's always just a little bit of steroids in the background. So your adrenal gland should be making a little bit of cortisol all the time. And so for maintenance for an Addisonian patient, which is almost always going to be a dog, they're just like, here's your daily dose of just a little bit of steroid, like just what we call a physiologic amount of steroid. However, if you are encountering a stressful event, your adrenal gland should produce more steroids. So what we usually try to do is counsel the clients about, like, okay, when you anticipate things that, like, we know are going to be stressful, your dog, you're going to take your dog to the boarding facility while you go out of town, or you're going to have a bunch of people come over for a party, like things that it doesn't even have to be bad stressful, like exciting stressful, but something that is going to be like a significant shift in their normal routine, then we say, hey, bump up the dose of steroids for that time being, so that they can deal with that. Because sometimes that will happen where you have an Addisonian patient that's pretty well regulated, but then they get out of whack because there was a stressor and they weren't able to respond normally. Like you and I have normal adrenal glands. And so we go, ooh, a little extra squeeze
so even, you know, if you're cortisol. Treating them, like if they have a stressful event, they need a little more.
They might. Yeah. And so if they're sick for some other reason, we usually give them a little extra during that time, and they're unlikely to get like way out of whack. Like, oh my gosh, they're nearly dead. But like, it can just help manage whatever those other stressors are. And again, just being sick from something else, right? Like, oh, you also got, you know, a virus or a cold, or you got sick for some other reason. Well, you're also Addisonian, and so your body should respond with a little extra bump of steroids. And so we just have to provide that ourselves.
Is that the sort of thing you could not treat it normally, but recognize, like, hey, my pet is ill, you go into the vet and remind them that it has Addison's, and they just give it some cortisol then?
Sorry, I didn't follow you. So who's doing what in this scenario?
So you're the owner.
Okay.
You don't want to have to like I don't want to have to give my pet
extra steroids.
Yeah, extra steroids.
Well, they're already giving it steroids every day. They're already giving it a pill every day.
I'm saying that they don't want to do that. They don't want to pill their animal.
Oh, too bad. You have to now.
Oh, okay. So that's not an option. That's what I was asking.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I could choose not to do that and just recognize anytime my animal is sick to bring it in.
No, because they need that little bit amount all the time to like try to stave off having these issues.
Oh, and it's just a pill. It's not a...
Yeah. It's one tiny little pill, you know, typically just once a day, and it's cheap. So like prednisone is cheap. So they're going to give just a little bit of prednisone every day. Okay. And then when you think there's something stressful, give a little extra. You're going to give a double dose essentially. But no, in order to treat this, you have to medicate your dog every day. Now for the mineral corticoids, you have the option to come in about once a month to get an injection. And a lot of people do that. Or there's a different pill you could give every day. So there's a few different options there. So if you're like really struggling to give medications, or you just like the idea of the once monthly injection, that's also acceptable. But no, you're going to have to give a daily pill. This is non-negotiable. If you can't do that, you're a bad pet owner. No, we're going to have to, like, if somebody said, an animal who was just unable to be medicated, there probably would be some opportunity or some options for like a longer acting steroid.
But they would need to
be treated. Would be all the time. Yeah. It's not just wait until there's a stressful event, because you need a little bit of cortisol all the time to kind of prevent these problems. And then you need a little bump, a little extra, when there's like extra stress, because life is stressful, right? Like that we're constantly, even if we're not aware of it, there's little things all the time. And so you need a little bit of cortisol in the background always.
So is there anything that causes Addison's disease?
Good question. So it's not really well understood. And I'm also not the expert on this, so I'll just qualify. So my understanding, most recent, evidence, or at least the theories, are that it actually is like immune mediated destruction of the adrenal gland in most cases. You can also have like outliers, like there's a tumor that takes over the adrenal gland, but you have two adrenal glands. So that's not going to be as common because you need something that's going to attack both sides.
Yeah. Y'all said it's not a very common.
No, it's not very common. So, I think that in people that's the thought. I think it's called Graves' disease in people, if I remember correctly. That don't quote me on that. I mean, I guess I'm quoted because it's not a recorded podcast, but you know what I mean. But I think that's what it's called, where and I think the my understanding is the theory is that it's an immune mediated destruction of that tissue. And that also tracks, and that makes sense that it would be progressive, right? That it would start in one area and then get move to the other area of the adrenal gland. So it would start as atypical and then become more typical as the mineral corticoids got affected. But is it Graves' disease? What does it say? Also called based on, I don't know what that is. Oh no, that's thyroid gland. Wrong hormone system.
Wrong.
Okay, that's why you shouldn't have quoted me. It's probably, I guess that was dumb because it's probably just called Addison's disease.
Yeah, it is called Addison's disease. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know why I thought that.
Wrong.
Yeah. There you go. A little delayed, but you got there. Yeah. Graves' disease is the thyroid one. I think that one is also, but I think that's where I was getting it confused because, that is an immune disorder, Graves' disease. Anyway. So I'm pretty sure that the prevailing theory on Addison's disease is, immune destruction of the adrenal glands, but I don't, that's.
So it's just something that happens.
Yeah, you're not caused by anything. Exactly. Well, if you were gonna try to prevent the immune destruction, you would give steroids. You'd give a higher dose, but yeah, it's probably not really worthwhile. You're just gonna be like, yeah, this is the thing, and it's a compared to other things, it's really easy to manage. Like compared to diabetes, for example, where your pancreas isn't working and you're not producing insulin, so much harder to regulate and manage than Addison's, where like they can go on and like most of those dogs go on and they have a happy life. They're great. The owners are like, yep, this is not a big deal. I'm not aware that it's going to, and I wouldn't tell a client like it's not going to affect your life expectancy. Like just be aware of it. When there's some stresses, you might need to give a little bump, but it's in the grand scheme of chronic diseases, this is a great one. So yeah, that's mostly what I have to share. Yeah.
I looked up the Addison guy.
Oh yeah. And so what did you learn?
And so he's the one that described the condition.
That's usually who it is.
Well, it's sometimes physics and math. It's usually, they didn't do it at all. It's like a respect thing.
Well, I guess that could be, not like that in medicine.
Yeah, he was just like a...
just a doctor.
Yeah. Well, I think he worked at one of the med schools and did a bunch
John
of stuff.
John Hopkins or something like that.
No, he's older than that.
Oh. Well, it's an old one. I don't know. But yeah, you're like, I'm seeing this, but like that's a particularly hard one because of how infrequently those patients are going to come through. So that's one of the important things, why you keep good medical records. Mm-hmm. What else did you learn?
And
where's he from?
What? He is from England.
Cool. Good job.
He is not a happy person. What? Suffered from mental depression and died by suicide at 65.
Oh, that's very sad.
Yeah.
Wow, way to bring us down, Topher.
Sorry.
Bummer.
But I don't see that he did anything terrible.
There's that. Yeah, didn't have his mental health under control.
But he was a noted and respected lecturer and diagnostician.
Yeah. That's a sad outcome for him. His legacy lives on, though. Like, again, like it's impressive with a disease like this that comes through so infrequently to put that pattern together and to recognize, because it is really vague. It's got vague signs all the time. Like they're nearly always. My guess is this is the pattern of the hyponatremia and the hyperkalemia is what was seen. And then eventually figure out where that comes from. And that's where it's typical Addison's, like the atypical version wasn't identified till later because that would be harder to find that pattern in. But
I didn't know that still it's pretty the good. Same.
I
think it's probably a thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that until they were like, oh, yeah, that's the sign. Yeah, that's what we could do a little more digging and find out that the other one probably had a different name. Or again, it probably just went unrecognized for a very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then some clever people are like, let's run every test. That's not necessarily a clever thing. Let's run all the tests. And then they stumble across things. So if you're in a research setting, I think it's a good idea to do that. Or if, yeah, you're just being stumped. But generally speaking, don't waste my money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I got. I don't know. Hopefully that is the students who are like, we want to understand this a little better. I hope that that has
satisfied. So you've got an animal that's sick a lot. And yeah,
waxing and waning signs that come back.
Whatever that means.
Waxing and waning? You know what that means.
It's not a moon.
Yeah, it is. The symptoms are just like a moon. Sometimes they're here and then they gradually go away and then they gradually come back. And then they go away and they come back.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's kind of, it's lost weight.
Maybe. It doesn't have to have lost
skin.
Weight. No, that was Cushing's disease.
Oh, it's lost weight.
Probably not. Yeah. So intermittent gastrointestinal upset, just lethargy, just bleh, not feeling very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, very vague. That's the problem. Super vague. And what are the blood work changes, though, that are typical for?
Low sodium, high potassium.
There you go. Good job.
Something with cholesterol.
Low cholesterol and a mildly low glucose.
Mildly low glucose.
Yeah. But the big things to remember, if you remember the sodium and potassium, that's the big one. And don't mix it up with Cushing's disease, which is the opposite. That's where you get the thin skin and the hair loss and panting if you're a dog.
Extra stressed.
Yeah. Floppy joints.
I don't know what floppy joints
are. Well, like. I was going to say joint laxity, and then you're going to be like, those fancy words. That's when you can get like hyperextension of your joints because they don't work very well. Because your collagen, that's where.
So if your dog starts walking real goofy.
No, it's true that they'll get like a more plantigrade, like their ankles and wrists essentially will drop lower because they can't hold themselves up because their like ligaments and tendons are stretching out.
So you get a little more flexible.
Yes.
Benefit.
No. You're a goof. Yeah. Anyway, so that's it. So I'm hoping that addresses the questions that were had. If not, let us know. And I'll try to do a better job.
Maybe ask someone else.
Yeah. That's true too. So anyway, that was my chat off the cuff on Addison's. From a very practical standpoint, there was obviously a lot I don't know, but hopefully this helps. All right. Bye.
Bye.